For a few years now, someone who I trusted to follow me on my personal Instagram account has been consistently informing the Sun newspaper of my private posts and stories. There has been so much information given to them about me, my friends, and my family, all without permission or knowledge. After a long time of trying to figure out who it could be for various reasons, I had a suspicion. To try and prove this, I came up with an idea. I blocked everyone from viewing my Instagram stories except one account. Those on my private account must have been wondering why I haven't had so many stories in a while. Over the past 5 months, I have posted a series of false stories to see if they made their way onto the Sun newspaper. And you know what? They did. The story about gender selection in Mexico, the story about returning to TV, and then the latest story about the basement flooding in our new house. It's been tough keeping it to myself and not making any comment at all, especially when the stories have been leaked. However, I had to. Now, I know for certain which account, individual, it's come from. I have saved and screenshotted all the original stories, which clearly show just one person has viewed them. It's Rebecca Vardy's account.
As I have said to you on the phone, I wish you had called me and thought this. I never speak to anyone about you as various journalists who have asked me to over the years can vouch for. If you thought this was happening, you could have told me and I could have changed my passwords to see if it stopped. Over the years, various people have had access to my Insta, and just this week, I found I was following people I didn't know and have never followed myself. I'm not being funny, but I don't need the money. What would I gain from selling stories on you? I liked you a lot, Colleen, and I'm so upset that you have chosen to do this, especially when I'm heavily pregnant. Oh, pregnant. I'm disgusted that I'm even having to deny this. You should have called me the first time this happened. Heartbreak emoji.
Dan, I was getting really heavy Mrs. Doubtfire from the
accent. Homer, you got so
the accent.
Homer got so much stronger as you went on. I loved it.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. There's a little bit of ad-libbing in there, which I enjoyed too.
Whoa, I'm pregnant. Pregnant. So good.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another week of the Soccer Thread podcast. This is Dan Schrader. You may also know me as the voice of Colleen Rooney. I'm joined in studio by Ryan Palmer, a.k.a. the voice of Rebecca Vardy.
Heavily pregnant, Rebecca Vardy.
Woo, I'm pregnant.
Really good. Yeah. I'm really glad not to be pregnant anymore.
Woo, pregnant.
The amazing thing about your performance, Ryan, is that you could really feel that heavily pregnant
there.
Yep. You didn't have to tell us. We knew.
Oh, yeah.
I could see it in your eyes.
Now I know. Now I know what it feels like. You know? I don't need that, 20-pound sand suit that Ben wear just to make, I feel heavily pregnant after that.
Colin Smith is outside somewhere.
Yeah, I'm out in the backyard in the swamp. I'm not heavily pregnant. I'm just blessed to be here. God, this the groundbreakingness on this show at episode 161 never ceases to amaze me. Great that we can fill the space in this week without soccer games with a little bit of soccer drama. Loving it.
A little Agatha Christie, if you will.
Love it.
Mike Samuelson in Minneapolis.
Shocking that Colin is outside. It is winter has come early here in Minneapolis. Fortunately, I get to be back in Studio A this week. Should make for some better audio quality for the listeners. But terror level of winter, definitely 12 out of 10 today.
Oof.
You're looking bundled up. You're looking like that Norwegian thing for comfy.
Yeah, what is it? Hygge?
I don't know what that means, but I do have a fleece on.
You're definitely up Hygge? In that fleece.
I'll ask my wife.
Yeah. You're more scared of winter than I think Rebecca Vardy is of Colleen Rooney.
Let's get straight in to the most important news of the week. Colleen Rooney, Agatha Christie. calling out Rebecca Vardy on Twitter about an Instagram leak to the Sun newspaper. This is just amazing stuff. Ryan Palmer, what is your favorite part of this entire drama?
Listen, well, first of all, the sleuthing work of Colleen Rooney is amazing. To block all but one follower, as she had her suspicions, and then screenshot things, is this just great? This is Bravo level Real Housewives. Yeah. I mean, we need Andy Cohen.
I want to learn more about her detective skills and how she identified Rebecca Vardy. Like, was she doing some kind of like A/B testing for just months and months and months, and just slowly like eliminating people? Do we know?
There's definitely an algorithm that she was using, but you know, if she's not going to tell this, there's a book deal in this. She might become a private investigator. This is some high level, grade A, internet sleuthing.
So this, I mean, it's beautiful, it's wonderful, but also, isn't this the exact scheme that you come up with when you're in like third grade and want to figure something out? Like, everyone's giving her so much credit. It's not.
Disinformation.
Disagree, Dan.
Smoke them out. This is great. I saw this in The Departed. They did the same thing in The Departed.
When do we see like a Colleen Rooney Private Eye movie come out? That's what I want to know. That's what I'm ready for.
I love that she kept going too. She gave her like three fake stories. Like, it wasn't one enough.
Yeah, prove it. Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Claim evidence and reasoning. It was all there, guys. I'm going to have my students read this. This is great.
Mike, what's your favorite part of this?
Oh my God. I mean, I don't know if I can choose one favorite part. but if I had to, I would say the whole my account was hacked. It's just such a chef's kiss, beautiful response to this allegation and I just love it.
I do like that she says many people have had access to my Insta.
My Insta.
Like this is ridiculous.
I don't run my own account. I there are people following me that I've never heard of in my entire life before. You're like a public person. Like, of course, you have thousands and thousands of followers. You tell me that you know every single one of them? Come on.
I think, Colin, favorite part?
My favorite part, I was discussing this drama with my wife, who actually brought it up to me. She said, "Do you know the soccer news of the week?" I said, "Yes, I do. I know exactly what you're talking about." And my favorite part of it is that it brings us back to a better time when WAGs were more important and more in the public eye.
Yeah.
And like, this was Real Housewives, apparently in the UK, Love Island. Like, all these people on Love Island are also like very famous for this kind of junk off the show as well. And in the tabloids, but it used to be, you know, in the Beckham era, that all these you knew all the WAGs, or at least people who were like on the inside in England, like knew about all the WAGs and their drama and whatever, their backstories and things like that. But now we don't really care anymore because we have all these reality TV stars. So it's good that the WAGs are providing their own reality TV for us.
Yeah, Colleen Rooney is like kind of one of the last of that era.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
the lost generation of WAGs.
Yeah, we really need to get the WAG Academy back up and funded.
Victoria Beckham, obviously, but she's like graduated from the WAG Academy.
For sure.
She's now
she's no longer WAG. She's in her own stratosphere.
While I really like the "I can't believe you do this while I'm heavily pregnant," which is like. You know, maybe you should stop selling stories to the Sun while you're heavily pregnant then, if that's a concern.
She doesn't need the money.
That's my favorite part is...
I don't need the money.
I'm not trying to be funny. Like,
I don't need the money.
It's just such a funny Britishism. Yeah,
like, I don't need the money.
Yeah, I love that. I love how that rhymed when you read it, too.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
So good.
I got to say, I watch a lot of Real Housewives, and there have been... This is a recycled story, selling stories to the press.
Yep.
So I just want everyone to know, and I want the people of Great Britain to know that, you know, the U.S. did this first, but we did do it. Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Lisa Vanderpump, a expatriate of
Great Britain was selling stories to the tabloids. So there's something about Brits that like to sell stories to the tabloids, I think. I'm just trying to start a little international crisis here.
I think we also should just pause and reflect on the glory that is the hashtag Wagatha Christie and just how good that is. That's actually probably my favorite part of the story, is someone came up with that. And also that my wife thought it was
a dog.
Can
you explain WAG for those that may not know?
Wives and girlfriends.
Okay, good.
Yeah, the fact I told this story to my wife because for some strange reason, she'd not heard this. And I also said that Wagatha Christie would be a great name for a dog, as your wife mentioned, Mike. And my wife said that if we could name our dog Wagatha, she would be okay getting a dog. So I'm all for this story.
Wow,
things really started to work out.
Colleen Rooney doing you huge favors.
Thank you, Colleen and Rebecca.
Mike, if you were going to make up a story about either for yourself or for Colleen to plant, gender selection treatment in Mexico is pretty good. She's pregnant. She wanted, the story was she's got 3 or 4 boys already. She really wanted a girl. So she was going to go to Mexico where they could determine that it would be a girl for her, which is just
what a great story to plant.
So good. House flooding and then a return to Strictly Come Dancing. Fine. They are fake stories. Mike, what would you plant?
Well, I just really the details of this story make it so great. What the headline in the Sun for the house flooding was House in Ruin, spelled R-O-O. just all these little things that keep popping out just make this. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Danielle Lloyd, one of the original WAGs, a glamour model, going on TV to be Rebecca Vardy's always been a jerk. And Rebecca Vardy replied to that and was like, what is she talking about? She's just jealous that Jamie Vardy, her husband, didn't hook her up with some TV show or something.
Oh, man.
So good. The whole thing.
If I had to do a story and I was Colleen Rooney, I would definitely do something kangaroo based because that also feeds into some great headlines.
That's a good angle. Sure.
Trip to Australia for some reason. Yeah, that's good. That's what I picked too.
Attacked by a marsupial. Yeah, exactly.
Also, given that I am the resident Real Housewives expert,
you keep bringing this up. We know, Palmer. We know.
One of the things that they like to do on the reunion shows is they like to bring the husbands of these Real Housewives out to drum up some strange drama. And there are some husbands that get into it, and there are others that just sit there. Actually, Mike, your favorite basketball player of all time from Maryland, Juan Dixon, is a husband one of these shows.
Wow.
Yep.
Good for him.
And he rises above all of the silly drama. Whenever they ask him a question, he is I don't know what you're talking about. I'd rather not discuss this.
Got that media training. That NBA media training, baby.
Yeah. What I would like to know is how are Wayne and Jamie responding to all of this? If they see each other, is it on site right there? Or are they just our wives are nuts?
This had to go through Rooney's people. There's no way that Colleen does this without it going through the entire organization.
Oh, you're not giving Colleen any of this credit?
She did it all. But when she was they talked about this, they had to, kids go down to bed, starting to get dinner ready, pour a glass of wine. This has to be what they're talking about. It's not like Wayne didn't
know.
Yeah,
that's true. Wayne definitely, it's very, it's also telling that none of the stories are Wayne Rooney career based,
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. None of it's trash.
Yeah, or being he wants more money from Darby County or anything based with his career. It's he would have been no, Colleen, don't do that. Don't sell that story to Rebecca Vardy or whatever. It's all going to be silly shit.
Keep my name out your mouth, Colleen.
Yeah.
I don't care what you do. Keep my name out your mouth.
Darby and Leicester are geographically pretty close to each other, I think. So, I think we could very well see, Colleen and Rebecca and or Wayne and Jamie just bumping into each other,
at the Tesco.
At the grocery store. Yeah. Yep.
A row at the Tesco.
A roux
at the Tesco.
Oh, there it is. So Rebecca Vardy also now claiming that she's hired forensic experts to check her Instagram and phone to prove that she was not responsible.
Maybe she just hired Colleen.
It's just like word association. She's like been watching a lot of CSI. Yeah. Bring the forensic experts in.
Somebody's DNA all over this.
Yeah, I was going to say, check my Instagram's DNA.
This is just, it's so good. It's so good. Oh, man. Should we? I don't want to move on.
Actually,
I woke up this morning and I was so excited for this, to get to talk about this, to do the cold open. And it hit me like a ton of bricks that this whole thing could also just be fake.
Ooh. Don't say that. Don't say that, Dan.
National break news.
Why? I mean, why?
You think Vardy's in cahoots here?
It's an international break. Everyone's a little bored. Rooney's are moving back to England. Maybe they want a little press coverage.
I mean, maybe that's the timing. Yes. Like, Rooney, Colleen knows she'll get more coverage for it now rather than, I don't know, whatever, when a major tournament, like the weekend of the Champions League final or something. But I still think if it's not completely fake, because why would the Vardys sign up to be like ridiculed like this?
Yeah. I refuse to believe it's fake.
The same reason that Rebecca's selling these stories.
They don't need the money, Dan. Aren't you paying attention?
They're not trying to be funny.
They don't need the money.
They don't need the money.
God, do you even listen, Dan? The account was hacked.
No, this is 100% real. It's on the internet, Dan.
100% real. The follow-up tabloid coverage of this also was just like, Colleen made an appearance in Hyde Park or wherever, looking stern, but also happy in a bright orange jumper.
On her phone, on her Instagram,
on her English press,
on her Insta.
So good. So don't worry, folks. We will keep you up to date on all the Agatha Christie latest news.
It's been disappointingly quiet for the last 48 hours, which I'm sad about.
It definitely blew up, and then it just kind of, as most things do in the press, news story. England lose, and everything is back to normal.
That's a good point. You know how cable news networks have like these ridiculous intro and outro music when big things happen, like breaking news? I feel like we need that, but for Agatha Christie Gate, just to really affirm us as the leading, the place that you need to be for all of your latest Colleen Rooney, Rebecca Vardy news.
Yeah, just circus music, though.
Cliff, make that happen. That's
I
so
can't
good.
Believe anybody likes this story more than we like this story.
I mean, we got emails about it. We know that Kevin likes the story as much as we like the story.
How can no one not like this story? This is an amazing story. It's great.
It's an amazing story. It's so good. Sure. In other amazing story news, this morning it's reported that Cristiano Ronaldo is considering purchasing the Sporting Lisbon stadium rights and naming it after himself.
These reports came from Colleen's Instagram account, actually. So,
what do those naming rights go for?
I don't know. I did scan this article. I did not see a number.
Okay.
His name is Cristiano Ronaldo. That's a pretty pretty expensive.
I'm just trying to figure out if we can, get the stadium rights for a smaller stadium and maybe call it the Soccer Thread Stadium or something like that. Just trying to
Estadion Soccer Thread.
Yeah.
Wagatha Stadium.
Just need to get a sense of, ballpark, like how much money we need.
Some naming rights have to go for pretty, just depends how far down the pyramid you're willing to go.
Yep.
And I think the answer for us is very far.
All the way.
As far as it takes. All the way.
The quote is from the club president, Frederico Varandas. Calling the stadium Cristiano Ronaldo is an option that right now we are not against. Like, really? That's a come and get me if I've ever heard it.
Yep.
Is this the most Cristiano Ronaldo thing you've ever heard of, Colin?
It's pretty Cristiano Ronaldo. I give it a solid 9 out of 10. There may be things that I can't remember that are even more ludicrous.
The statue with the bulge in the pants?
Yeah, that's pretty... That's up there. One. Yeah. But I mean...
Didn't you want to name like an airport after
him?
There's
an airport already named after him.
Did they... Yeah, I think that's bigger than a stadium.
But this is different because he would be doing it. That was like, it's in his hometown. They just named it after him because he's the most famous person from that town. This is like, I'm going to buy this and name it after myself, which is
You don't think Cristiano was angling
involved
to be called Cristiano Ronaldo Airport? You don't think he was part
no,
of
No, yeah, I think he's
wasn't
in
a post.
He's definitely, in, he's definitely post. In cahoots there. He's in cahoots. But I think this is, I wouldn't put it, I also wouldn't put it past him that if he does buy the naming rights of the stadium, that like the story ends there. Like the branding that we could see on the outside of the stadium or the statues or whatever, you know, it's just opening the door to a Cristiano Ronaldo live marketplace museum experience.
Just a museum, yeah. Basically. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think he's thinking too small. He should be going for either the full club. So the club is called Sporting Portugal, which I love. It's a club for the whole country. But why not just call it Sporting Ronaldo?
Yeah.
Or just sponsor the league. So it's the Cristiano Ronaldo Liga.
Premier League.
Liga, whatever it's called in Portugal.
Liga Ronaldo.
Liga Ronaldo. I think it's got a nice ring to it.
I like, yeah, I like the idea of calling it Liga Ronaldo. And then it, you make it like the English pyramid, right? Where like you still have... You
get relegated to the Messi League.
That would be brilliant. But you still have like 1, 2, 3 under that. So it like takes the place of like, this is like premier. This is above one. We don't just do A, B, C or 1, 2, 3 anymore. We're creating a new league that's above that system. And that's the Ronaldo League.
I don't know. I mean, the man is a brand and they're obviously naming the stadium incorrectly. It's not Cristiano Ronaldo Stadium. It's got to be CR7.
Mm.
I think that'll be.
That's how you sell
that'll
it.
Be the address. The zip code.
That's true. Nike has to be very excited about this idea.
This is like the most modern football story of all time also.
Yeah, it is a little bit.
While he's still in the game, that's the thing that really gets me is like, if you're retired, whatever, yeah. You're investing something, fine. But like he could go play at the stadium in a competitive
just
match.
Thinking that seems, that'd be incredible.
Just seems not right.
The house that Ronaldo
boy is very rich.
Very, very rich boy. International breaks are amazing because actually this one, if more international breaks turn out like this,
yeah.
We should just have only
Puck international club football.
Breaks.
Yeah. We don't need it.
This is a lot happier than our normal podcast. I'd say that.
What is not to be happy about?
It's true. Give me more reality TV and I'm good. I can talk about this all day.
There was some football. U.S. men's national team played against Cuba. They were up 4-0 in the first 13 minutes. They ended up winning 7-0, which is really a pretty poor last 77 minutes.
Yeah, we suck. We were great for 13 minutes and then we sucked for the rest. My brother actually went to this game and missed all of the goals.
You're kidding me?
In the first 15 minutes, I think.
Jesus.
That's so good.
Why? Because he was out buying beer or because he couldn't get in?
I don't know. He's probably traffic. Running around the stadium in his Captain America suit. I don't have no idea.
It's a very young Palmer thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Young Palmer's not
yeah,
that saying, young
that,
anymore.
That Palmer
like
doesn't grow older.
Seat early.
Yeah.
Love it. Still pretty young. I mean... This, like, I did kind of say this was like a no-win situation, but actually, like, scoring 4 goals in 13 minutes and winning 7-0, I think
just putting it to
I
bed.
Think they get a check plus on this one. You know, this isn't like a full graded assignment, but you definitely pass.
Yeah, I agree. Weston McKennie gets 3 goals, 3 of those 4, so he had a hat trick in 13 minutes. He also picked up an assist. Jordan Morris assisting on, I think, 2 of those goals to Weston and then another goal to Sargent. So ends with 3 assists and gets a goal himself. Both those guys came off at halftime, so they should be nice and fresh for the Canada game coming up this week, which is expected to be the real interesting one out of this set. So, you know, I actually didn't see this game live because 4 p.m. on a Friday is not a time that I'm... you know, available to watch soccer generally. But I watched the highlights and I read a little bit of analysis. This Jordan Morris to Weston McKennie hookup, like, did anyone write that in before the game as the one that was going to generate all the goals?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that this is not something for the future, though.
I agree.
This is Cuba. Remember, this is Cuba. Yeah. It's nothing to write home about. I don't think that this is a big deal.
McKennie has so much freedom against a team like Cuba to be making these runs into the box at any and every time to get on the end of these that he wouldn't have against a good team
because you can't just throw everybody in the box every time somebody gets the ball on the wing. So I think that's like tactically a huge part of it. I don't think that just because he had a hat trick against Cuba that all of a sudden McKinney is going to be a scoring threat for this team, like on a regular basis or in good games.
Yeah, I mean, maybe what we found is Jordan Morris can be a good CONCACAF hex player for us. Like, he can just go in and put a shift in and do work, but I don't know how long that that will last in terms of
it's enough to get us to a World Cup.
Yeah. I mean, that's the type of shift that needs to happen for us to get into the World Cup, but once we're in the World Cup, I don't know if that type of player is what we need.
Yeah, I mean, I think the game against Canada will be much more telling of where this team is at. You know, it's good that we got this game out of the way and nobody got injured and we won easily. And, you know, hopefully it's positive for the players. But, you know, if we can't impose ourselves against Canada, who I think are like a decent team, but a team that we should be beating, I mean, that's the test, right? Of going up there and being the dominant team and winning, you know, by a few goals. That to me is a sign of, I don't know if progress is the right word, but at least positive sign. I think anything kind of less than that is cause for concern.
Other guys that we should kind of note here, Josh Sargent gets the start, which is good. Zardes is on this roster, did not get the start. Josie Altidore left the squad,
injured.
I think. I don't remember why. Injured. Yeah. So anyway, Josh Sargent gets a start, gets a goal. I think it was the fifth goal?
Yeah, it was.
You know, the game was put away at this point anyway. Mike, I remember last week you wanted, 6-0 and Josh Sargent with three of them or something? So
yeah.
Is a start and one goal enough?
I mean, it's fine. Like, I'm definitely glad he started. You know, it wasn't the kind of dominant performance that I was hoping for. And I, you know, also didn't watch this game. But just from what I've seen, it doesn't seem like Sargent put in such a strong performance that, you know, he sort of guaranteed himself a start against Canada. So I fully expect Zardes to start in that game, unfortunately. And maybe Sargent comes off the bench later. But I mean, I'm glad he went, you know, the full 90, glad he got his goal, but I'm not blown away.
Christian Pulisic gets a start, scores the 7th goal from the penalty spot after a handball, and goes 68 minutes. So Weston McKennie, Jordan Morris out at half. Pulisic goes 68. Do you think, Colin, there's anything to read into that, or is that just that he's not getting minutes at Chelsea, so he's got a little more in his legs, and so he goes a little longer than those other guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right, and I think that would have been worked out with Berhalter before the game. Like, do you want to play? How much do you want to play? You know, what can we do to help you? Improve your position at Chelsea. Do you want to play 90 minutes and show off, or do you want to save your legs? You know, and so I think he'll be, at least for the Cuba game, that'll be a conversation that he's having in that regard with Berhalter, because I do think that you know, any good international manager recognizes that Pulisic's important, but you know, part of Greg's job in these easy games is also to help guys with their position at their club teams, because you know, that club success will only benefit them on the international stage, right? So, like, not calling in, we've talked about guys not getting called in before, I think, like Sargent, so that they can go to the full preseason camp with their club team. So I think it's kind of one of those situations where he's, you know, he's kind of calibrating how much he wants to play, basically.
Good, easy win here. I noticed looking at the standings for the group, which is Canada, USA, and Cuba, that Canada and Cuba have already played both of their games against each other. So Cuba lost both, Canada won both. So Canada's the team we need to worry about. Cuba was never going to win the group. On Tuesday, we go to Toronto to play Canada. That obviously has to be a win. Canada is a better team than they used to be, but the U.S. should still be a better team. Do you need anything specific out of this, Ryan, or you just want to see the win, like
just
get a result?
Just a win. I think I think a dominating win would be nice. 3-4-0. I think that we got to be 4 goals better than Canada, right? But yeah, I would like to see a dominating performance. That's about it. It's a soft group. We should win this group.
Mike, you said you expect Zardes to get back in there. Probably Michael Bradley on his home pitch over Yule, I think, started in the Cuba game where essentially no defensive responsibility, so a nice, easy game to play the six in. Any other changes that you guys expect?
I mean, I think those are the two most obvious. I would imagine that Morris is going to continue playing just based on his performance and that he was taken off at half. And, you know, I think Daniel Lovett started in this game. He starts against Canada. That would be surprising. But Greg is, he's a surprising little fellow, Greg. So hard to know what he's thinking.
So that is on Tuesday evening. We go to Toronto to play against Canada. Anything else there? U.S. men's national team. I was looking back at the U.S. men's national team results. The run has not been bad under Greg. This obviously looks like huge win.
Greg, apologist.
No, I just... My point is not that he's good or bad. I think he is what he is. But like, to me, like even internally, I feel like the narrative swings so fast.
That's true.
On like a single result, right? The Mexico results, and it was like, he's got to go. This one, and everyone's like, oh, we're building something.
No, I'm not like that.
Yeah.
This is Cuba. This is a team that we should, you know, I think we should have scored more goals. What are we doing? I think the narrative swings because there are so few games in the international cycle, right? So every game feels like it is a very important game. And if you don't win it, or if you don't look good, or if you don't look like you know what you're doing, which I think that has been a pattern, and we talk about this every cycle, that Greg Berhalter wants to play a certain way, and that specific type of way is a way in which you need to practice a lot and be around your team and understand players. And that's not the most conducive style in the international game, right? I'm not like, oh, great, we've sorted everything out. That's great, because we beat Cuba 7-0. We probably should have beat them 10-0. Pulisic, from what I can tell from the score sheet, because I wasn't able to see this game, did he perform well? Did he look good? You know, we had McKinney. That's great. That's 3 goals. But, you know, Mike saying that we're going to juggle the lineup again, you know, I don't think that we can read into any of this, right? The results that we need to read into are the results against Costa Rica, the results against Mexico, you know, the bigger clubs. Those are the results that we need to look at, not Cuba. We're not building anything against. Great, we beat Cuba. That's good.
Stop swinging so wildly, Dan's internal.
Dan, you just need to calm down about these Cuba victories.
My bad. Is that the only soccer game we're going to talk about? It might be.
Yeah, I think so.
We have about 1 million emails. So, Mike, good luck with this.
Yeah.
Email us at soccerthread@gmail.com. We do love this. We're saving them for the end here because we just want to get into them. Soccerthread@gmail.com. Mike, help us.
All right. We're not going to get to all these emails. So we're going to get to a lot of them. But frankly, we got more emails than we have the capacity to answer. Our email cup overfloweth. First email is from Raymond Orozco. He wants us to talk about the current American player pool. He says that, you know, there's a lot of talk that, you know, our player pool now is really talented. Not sure who he's referring to, but we'll just kind of run with this because I like his question. But, you know, if you look at our player pool now and you look at some of the guys who have been part of the team over the past, you know, 15 years or so, he mentions Donovan, Dempsey, Beasley, Reyna, McBride, O'Brien, Friedel, Stewart, Wolf, Pope, Sané. You know, those are guys who had pretty distinguished careers. Do you think most of those guys are getting in a starting team right now? I mean, I guess the question is kind of, how good is our player pool right now, today, compared to maybe where it was 5, 10, 15 years ago?
This is a hard question to answer because I think nostalgia, right? So when you think of Donovan, Dempsey,
John Pope, O'Brien.
John O'Brien, yeah. Right? Like that's, I think that we elevate these guys because of nostalgia, and we think of those are the guys that we grew up watching. Those are the guys that we grew up kind of idolizing, I guess. And you want to say that, those guys were the best of that generation. But I think athletically, I think that we're on a whole nother level. I think the game has changed a lot since even, that 2002 run. Would these guys get in the team? I think for sure. I mean, look how long Dempsey last. Michael Bradley's getting old and he's still there. I think that these guys would definitely get a run in, but I don't think that they are as great as we think that they are.
Yeah.
They would be today.
And right. Kind of going along with
the thing that I think, go ahead, Colin.
Kind of going along with Palmer's point, it's like, when you remember that list of 10 or 11 guys or whatever, you're remembering peak everyone, right? You're like picking, 2010 Donovan and whatever, 2014 Dempsey, 2002 McBride, right? But like, you can't just line up all those guys' peaks and say, oh, that was a team that ever happened. Like, yeah, that'd be the all-time best team, right? But all those guys had arcs, and like everybody in our player pool now has an arc, right? Like, McKennie and Pulisic and Josh Sargent are way on the, early side, and they will be better sometime later in their career. And then guys like Bradley, yeah, you could pull somebody off that team and say they'd be a better number six probably. There's, but it's because it's old ass Bradley, right? And that's true for, everyone in every position, right? So I don't know. It's kind of it makes the question like, yeah, because you just view it through this nostalgic lens. Yeah, of course you could imagine any of those guys finding a place in this team, but only if they're the peak version of themselves, not if they're,
right.
Yeah.
Any other way. Because a lot of those guys are career MLS guys. So by that metric, like, even the peak version of them was never that great. Like, don't get me wrong, there are a lot of them.
Well, so that was my
there are a lot
point.
Of U.S. men's national team legends, but, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, so a lot of these guys, bossed games in MLS when MLS was nowhere near what it is now also. Like, MLS 1.0, and you can boss a game. Like, that doesn't really make you, okay, you're like a midfield general in 1998 MLS. That's not, looking back, I don't think that impressive. Mm-hmm. But then there's also a little bit of, like, the more overarching question about whether this is the best team now that, we've ever had, or the most depth or whatever, which is a bit of just a common thought, I think, is where Raymond gets this. That I think actually might be true, but the level of the competition has also come up, and also partially because MLS has gotten better, right? Panama's better, Honduras is better. All these teams that we play against, they're not all Cuba anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's this funny thing, like, yeah, we might be better than we ever have been, honestly, but the competition has also caught up, so it just doesn't feel like it relative to that.
Yeah,
right?
I think also, like, this group of players that we're seeing emerge now, like, they're still pretty young, and they just don't really quite have the savviness. Like, if you look at sort of the core group of players in 2014, that team had a lot of guys who were in their prime, who'd been to a World Cup, like, I think if we drop this team tomorrow into a big game, like, they could perform great, but they could also have kind of a collective deer in the headlights moment. And I think in hopefully not too long, a couple years, this group could be our best group ever. But I think right now we're just at this weird kind of transition point where we have a bunch of guys who are probably too old or just not good enough, and then we've got a bunch of guys who just haven't met their potential yet and are still figuring out what it means to be an international player. But I think just because of kind of where individuals are at in their career, this team isn't the best team that the U.S. has ever put together, even when you don't even factor in that you know, other teams around the region have gotten better. Like, I just think this team is still a little bit raw at this point.
Yeah, I would say the individual talent might be there, but on a team level, no, this isn't even close to the best U.S. men's national team ever. Like, no way.
Is that just because we don't have Bruce Arena putting that together for us?
Yeah, so that was going to be my question, actually, is that we have a lot of individual talent. The fact that we can't put together our best team, is that a reflection of Berhalter?
Well, it's a little bit of a reflection of Berhalter, but it's also a lot of what Mike's saying, is that, you know, in 2014, I know the manager in that World Cup gets a lot of shade, but he got these veterans together, and those veteran leadership played well in that World Cup. Showed really well.
You don't even want to say
got
his
out
name.
Of the group of death.
He
must not be named. You know, did a job there that I'm not sure we would be thinking that Berhalter and these guys could do, get out of a group of death at the World Cup, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But it was a lot of it was because he had guys like Dempsey and Howard who were, you know, like Mike's saying, super savvy veteran leaders, and, you know, Jermaine Jones, guys like that, that are, yes, talented, and maybe Weston McKennie, when he retires, will have a better club resume than Jermaine Jones. But right now, to play one game at a World Cup, you give me this version of Weston McKennie or 2014 Jermaine Jones, I think you'd take 2014 Jermaine Jones all day. So I think that's the difference right now.
Yeah, and I think maybe what's different about this group compared to other groups is that there feels like there's potential, again, probably not right now, but in the not too distant future, that this team could like impose themselves more than good U.S. teams have in the past.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there might be an opportunity for us to really dictate games a little bit more because we have a higher quality of player. But, I mean, we've seen against Mexico, like, that's just not happening right now. So I think even when you look at that sort of metric or from that angle, you know, we're just not there yet.
You could see it coming together, but it's not there yet.
Yep. Yep. All right. One more email from Raymond. He wants to know if, he says Real Madrid fans should be worried that they could be the next Manchester United. Real Madrid, you know, they had their four Champions League wins in 5 years or something. Little Real Madrid siren going off there. but you know, since Ronaldo left, they've struggled a little bit. They're looking better this year, but do you think like that's a club that could see a drop of the level that Man United have seen in the past, however long it's been since Fergie left, like 7 years?
I would say no, because of the money that Real Madrid has. I think that they're able to go out and get the players that they want. They're not as, you know, I guess we could say this year that United made some weird moves with going for Harry Maguire with so much money, but I think Real Madrid can do that a lot easier and possibly get better players, not Harry Maguire for that much money. They could get someone else that's possibly better than Harry Maguire for that much money. So I think Real Madrid is always going to be, they're never going to drop like United has dropped. They're not going to finish middle of the table. I just don't think that happens.
I think the place for me where this parallel breaks down a little bit is that Manchester United, the end of the era was when Fergie left, and Real Madrid has never been dependent on a single manager. They go through managers quite quickly. So it's not like that turnover is ever going to leave them unaware.
Yeah.
Or unawares, or whatever the British term is. So I don't quite see that happening. I think actually maybe a more direct parallel to that end of the Fergie era fall off will be the end of the Messi era at Barcelona.
Yeah.
And how they deal with that.
Yeah.
Because there are, I mean, we've even seen that this year when Messi wasn't playing at the beginning of the year, not looking that good, he comes back, he's getting, you know, 10 out of 10 player ratings in games, driving the game for Barcelona. So just in terms of like a club that could drop off because of the end of an era where they were so dependent on a single person, I think Barcelona is more interesting.
Yeah. It should also be noted that Real Madrid is in first place in La Liga right now.
Yeah.
So
dropping off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tough for them. All right. Next email is from Spencer Dixon. He's got a a couple questions for us. First one, probably a good one for Ryan Palmer to take a shot at. Who's going to be the next manager to leave their team in the Premier League? Spencer puts out Pochettino, Ole, Marco Silva, or Steve Bruce. Palmer, any of those ring a bell for you?
I mean, Poch is not going to leave in the middle of the season, or I don't see that happening. So,
by you don't see it by his own choice, or Tottenham won't get rid of him.
I mean, I don't think he walks on his own. Like, I can't imagine that he just decides to like quit.
But will Tottenham get rid of him?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that he makes it to the end of the season, and then we close this chapter. I don't see him lasting another season unless things drastically turn around. I would say that, you know, Ole is short-lived. This is not gonna last too long for him. But I also don't see that happening next. You know, the managers you got to worry about right now are, you know, at the bottom of the table. Steve Bruce could go. You know, I don't see any of these big name managers going right now. That's like panic button time. And I know that I said panic button at the end of the,
you were just worked up.
But it is, I mean, it's definitely panic time, but it's not like new manager panic time. Try something different, with the lineup panic time. And Pochettino this week has said that like he's going to make a lot of different changes and, you know, change the starting 11 and try something new. So, which definitely needs to happen, but I don't see him leaving.
All right. So you think Pochettino is going to make it through the season? Is that?
I do.
What about these other three guys? Ole Gunnar, Silva, or Bruce?
No.
Ole's gone.
Ole's gone. Who's at Watford?
I don't know.
I think
that guy just got fired. They just fired their manager.
Well, the other one, the new ones also will get fired because they're terrible. I would say the one that is in the most trouble is probably Steve Bruce.
All right. You heard it here first.
GK Sanchez Flores at Watford?
That's right. Yeah, I think he's back for a second stint. He was there a couple of years ago, right?
I think that's right. That is a familiar name.
All right. Next question from Spence is, what makes a good international manager instead of a club manager? I think this is a good one. I mean, we've kind of danced around this a little bit with you know, some of the recent U.S. men's national teams coaches. But I don't know, Dan, what are your thoughts here on sort of the differences between these two positions?
I think a Pep Guardiola would not be a good international manager because he is too hyper detail oriented and intensive. An international manager needs to have a clear, simple game plan, needs to be able to plug different players into different holes because you only get the players you get and you'd never know who might be injured. So it has to be pretty interchangeable, swappable. So I think it's just, you know, you have to be more of a man manager. You have to be a little bit better at keeping guys on the same page through your weekly Skype calls or whatever. just more about, you know, less about the very specific tactics and more about just being able to keep a group of guys happy and get the best out of them when they show up and you get two training sessions and then you got to go play. Like, it's got to be pretty simple and you got to keep guys pretty happy. And I think it's that simple.
So someone like Pep, or I don't know, I just feel like, you know, when you look at sort of the big club managers of our age, you know, Klopp or Pep, like, do you think that they could be good international managers? They just have to change their style, or like just their personality does not suit them to be an international manager where you have such little time with the team?
I love that question. I could see Klopp being a good international manager, and I don't see Pep. I just don't think Pep could let it go, you know, or like accept that it's going to have to be simple.
That's, I think Klopp would be, is a great example of somebody that is managing a Premier League or a club team that his style would transfer really well internationally, because like you said, like it's the man management. It's how do you bring the guys? Cause you have them for two weeks, a week every once in a while. Right. Yeah. So you have to be able to build a community quickly. Like there's a lot of like team building that has to happen really quickly. And yeah. I think Klopp is great at that.
Hugs all around. Just giving the biggest hugs when yes. people come in for that first team meal.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And then, his style, I think, is relatively simple. It's not like super complicated. The formation is pretty straightforward, and it's just like work your ass off and press, and then once you press, like counterattack. And I think that style is pretty straightforward. Whereas like Pep is like movement and you know where to move and when, and that you have to be super organized. And I just don't think that is conducive.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you're kind of underestimating how good Klopp's teams are at pressing. And it's, I don't know. I'm not a tactical man myself, but it seems like if it was that easy, everyone would be doing it. So he must be doing something right.
I'm not saying it's like easy, but I think that the messaging is probably pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Yeah.
Knowing Jurgen pretty closely, I would say that I think we probably are underselling the level of tactical sophistication in that Liverpool squad, but he also seems like a guy, like you can simplify that, right? The tough thing about pressing is that the entire team has to be able to read these cues and press as a unit, but you can simplify all that. Instead of having these really difficult cues that you have to drill in, you can just say like when the other team gets to their half of the circle, like the center circle, then we're going to press it. Like you can dumb that down, make it more simple. And Klopp seems like a guy that would have no problem doing that. He just probably makes it way more interesting because he has all this time with these players.
Yeah. He's got to fill that.
I mean, that's again, as a fairly close associate of Jurgen Klopp, that's my read on the situation.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about like who are your most successful international managers, right? Like if you think about the managers that have won the previous World Cups, right? So we have what's his name? LeBlanc at France.
Yogi Löw.
Yogi Löw. And then the previous Germany was pretty successful under Klinsmann, right? But Klinsmann also had a stint at Bayern Munich, and that was not a very successful stint. How many of these guys have been able to translate success at the international level to success at the club level? I don't know the answer to that question. I'm posing that question now. Yeah. So.
I mean, the person who comes to mind for me is Vicente Del Bosque, who I think won a couple of Champions Leagues with Madrid and then started Spain on their run. I don't remember if he was there when they won the first Euro and then left, or if he was there when they won the World Cup and then left, but he definitely won at least one big tournament with them. So I think there are examples, but it's also like as the game has evolved and become more tactically intricate at the club level, like I think the difference has gotten a lot bigger even in like the last 10 years. It's hard to say like if that kind of success at one level still translates to the other.
The guys that you can think of that have coached both international and club all seem basically like fairly straightforward, mm-hmm. like except for Del Bosque, which I think is a good shout, but like Gus Hiddink,
yep.
Fabio Capello, these guys aren't super intricate. Like they take a squad and they put them on the field and they get them playing to their strengths.
I mean, no one would call them a genius, right? Or a tactical genius, right?
Yeah. Well, and a lot of them have done time at Real Madrid where that, you know, seems like you have the level of player where you just get them on the field and get everybody happy and they're going to win, right? The trick at Madrid is just keeping people happy, and that's the same thing with an international team.
Yep. All right, last question from Spencer. Dan, this one's for you. Why do you hate LAFC so much?
I don't hate them. Do you hate LAFC? There is definitely a rivalry brewing between the Timbers and LAFC. And I hope that that's not just the from the Timbers side. I'm very conscious of, like, you know how Boston hates New York, but New York does not care. I don't think I'm just Boston in this situation, but there's a bit of a rivalry. I also just am. They're very good. I said give them their credit. Vela's doing well. Bob Bradley has them humming. He's a good manager. They just have. I don't. Maybe in MLS, a good 2-year run is as much as most cycles have anyway. So I should just say that they're on a run as good as anyone ever's been on. But I don't know. Let's just see where they are in a couple of years. I don't know. Let's see where their fan base is still supporting them in a couple of years. Let's see. You know, I don't credit for what they've done, but I'm not ready to say that they're the best team that's, you know, the best club that's ever existed in MLS. I'm just. I don't hate them, but part of it's a rivalry.
These upstarts, Dan can't stand it.
I mean, they got to win the title before we can say that they're the best club to ever play,
yeah.
Right?
I mean,
they got to win the title.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that last week.
They have
too.
No, they did not win any trophies yet. They've not won a trophy yet. They lost in the U.S. Open Cup. They had a great regular season. In America, the regular season does not matter. Right. Like if this was the Premier League, this was a record setting season and they would be Man City and they would be lifting a trophy. But, you know, that's not how American sports work. No one, if they don't win the trophy, no one's going to say, yeah, but LAFC had a better season. That's just not how it works. So they got to prove themselves.
Yep.
A lot of people also giving LAFC traveling support a lot of love. Sorry, but Timbers have been doing this for years. Please. This is my salt. Come on.
Palmer, as a Timbers fan, how do you feel about LAFC? Do you feel like there's a rivalry here? Do you hate LAFC?
I don't hate LAFC. I feel like I don't know enough yet. But am I rooting for them to win the MLS Cup? No.
Salt.
Do I kind of want them to not win the MLS Cup? Yes. So am I rooting against them? Yeah. But I usually root against teams that like run away with competitions. Like I want the underdog to win. And you know, I like that story. So I don't know. If they win, it would be great for them, but if they don't win, I think it's better for narrative.
Yeah.
So
yeah. All right. Fair enough. Next email, and I think last email we're going to be able to get to on this pod, is from Eric Schrauben. He points out that we've taken up a lot of his time on this podcast. Some would say wasted a lot of his time by his about 6.5 days of his life. Just imagine, Eric, if you have to actually record this podcast, it takes even longer, the editing process. So just imagine how much of our lives we've wasted.
The drive up to Beaverton.
Yep.
I also like that in his estimation, all of these podcasts is only 1 hour long.
Yeah, that's cute.
So you're rounding down.
That's very cute, Eric. He also sticks the knife in a little bit. He says that he wants to know what our source is for claiming to be the 59th best soccer podcast in the U.S. I'd like to say I don't think we claim to be the 59th best, just the 59th most popular. But he found some
Pauline Rooney's Instagram account. That's our source.
Yeah, he found some other list that had us down at 147, which is it's a tough pill to swallow. I think Dan, you had maybe a little editorial comment on that ranking.
Well, so our source for the 59th best was some list of American soccer podcasts, and we made that list. So there were 59 on that list, and therefore we had to be one of the top 59. Hard to say where in there. We could have been top 20. You don't know, but.
It was not appropriately ranked.
No, they weren't ranked. It was just a list. This 147th, this is for all of you amateur podcasters out there and professional, because I know you're listening, Alexi Lalas. the iTunes recently updated their categories so that you can actually categorize not only as a sports podcast, but specifically as a soccer podcast. The Soccer Thread, as the amateur outfit that we are, only took advantage of that actually in the middle of last week. So the fact that we're 147th on the soccer categorization in iTunes, not that bad.
Yeah, actually,
we'll see where we are next week.
Since Eric,
let's get a full week.
Since Eric sent this email, we've actually dropped to 170th. But it wow.
I take everything I've Jeez. Said.
It does show that we're up 21 spots. So maybe we had previously dropped further, but now we're bouncing back. I don't know.
We need to get Casey Kasem on this case. We need to climb the charts, baby.
We're just ahead of 74 Till Infinity, a Quakes podcast.
Oh, you want to know who
that.
I hate?
Dan hates that.
You want to know who I hate in California? The Quakes. 147th, even 170th. That means on average we are, you know, top four ish per a state. I like that. I'm okay.
Yeah, solid.
That's I like that. That math, that's some mathematical gymnastics.
We are definitely, we are top four of the Wyoming specific podcast, I think. We're not in Oregon, but if we move to some other state, we'll take it.
All right. And then finally, Shrabin's last question, which we were encouraged by some listeners over this week to spend more time talking about things, you know, just banter, basically. And in that vein, Shrabin wants to know what you think you've drank more in your life, beers or coffees. Palmer.
There's 100% coffee. 100% coffee. I don't wake up in the morning and drink a pot of beer. I drink a pot of coffee pretty much every morning.
You drink a full pot of coffee?
Roughly.
Jesus.
I drink a lot of coffee. I need it.
But, I mean, if you have a beer, that's at least 12, maybe more ounces. A cup of coffee is not 12 ounces. He's not asking.
Well, he's drinking by pots, he wants, though. That's Palmer's unit of consumption.
I drink a lot of coffee every single day. I drank a whole pot yesterday, doing work, sitting on the couch. Working. I drank a whole pot, 100%.
I think this is close. I love this question. I don't know.
I had three beers yesterday. So I drank more coffee yesterday than beers.
See, that's the thing. I'll have, you know, two cups of coffee in the morning. It's got to be coffee, I guess. I started drinking both about the same time in my life.
I won't comment.
Yeah.
I'm not going to comment on that last part. But
it's I'd probably drink two cups every day. It's rare-ish that I drink more than two beers in a day. So therefore, it's got to be coffee.
Yeah. For me,
Yeah.
I was just going to say, for me, this is an easy one. It's definitely beer because I really only started drinking coffee with any regularity within the last year and a half, maybe. Beer was out to a pretty sizable lead by that point. So I'd say day to day, now I'm probably drinking more coffee, but beer way out in front, left the field a couple times.
But you're going to catch up. The coffee's going to catch up.
I mean, I think it's going to take a good decade or so for coffee to catch up. I'm still not drinking coffee every day.
I think that this is a tortoise and a hare question. I think the hare is the beer for sure. You know, younger, binge drinking is a thing. Do it, don't do it, or whatever you do, drink responsibly.
Please
as
drink
we are
responsibly.
The 170th best That's soccer right. podcast, we should let our listeners know to drink responsibly.
Never drink and drive. That's just dumb.
Don't do
Seriously,
that.
Don't. Do not.
But the tortoise in this case is coffee. Like, you don't start drinking coffee until you're a little older. But it is a thing that you have to have in the morning. I even woke up this morning and made coffee for my wife, and she was so excited that I did that. And I've never gone to the store and brought back a beer and get just so excited for the fact that I brought back a beer for her. So coffee for sure is the winner of this. Lifetime, you're drinking more coffee. There's no doubt. And if you're drinking more beer than you are coffee, then you might have a problem.
Reevaluate.
Or you just don't drink a lot of coffee, you know? You don't have to drink coffee. Not everyone has to That's drink true. Coffee, Palmer.
You're right. Good point.
You're right.
Great email, though, Eric.
But don't drink too much.
I think
just be responsible.
Really, we've learned a lot about ourselves.
We have. Also, our mothers have learned a lot about us.
Yeah, well, if they listen to this podcast.
Hi, Mom. I love you.
All right. I think that's the last email we have that we're going to be able to get to today.
Raymond, let your kids go to the park by themselves. Violent crime is at an all-time low. I hate this narrative that it's more dangerous and it's bad parenting. Kids got to be kids. Kids got
to
be kids.
Yeah, we didn't have time to get to that full email, so that's a peek behind the curtains.
Wow. I don't even know what that email is referencing, but okay. I don't read the run order.
Don't have to. You just show up. Thanks, Cliff.
Thanks, Cliff.
Thanks, Cliff.
Sorry about my audio, Cliff. Bye.
People have had access to my Insta.
You know it's a serious start when it's a cold open.
They're gonna, oh my god, we're gonna have to do a cold opening every week now.
A little Wagatha Christie, if you will.
You got that media training. Got that NBA media training, baby.
Is that the only soccer game we're gonna talk about? It might be.
I won't comment. Yeah. I'm not gonna comment on that last part.
Ow. I take everything I've said back.
Yeah. I mean, if he doesn't get, I don't think he'll actually edit, and I'll do it tonight, but whatever. It's all good.